Blog Talk Radio.
All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
The vice president said, and he's going to put you all in chains. Was he talking about slavery? You bet your ass he was. Was he using a vernacular? Yes, he was. Did he think it was cute because there were many in the audience? Yes, he did. Was it something stupid to say? You bet your life it was stupid. And it is something that if a black had said it, we would have been laughing because we would know that damn hell, they may be beating the hell out of us, but we, they ain't thinking about putting us in any chains.
It's Reese on the radio, and we are live 1 minute after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is the 27th of August, 2012. Just finished making love to my wife. I just want to let...
Oh, my God.
Just kidding. I'm just kidding. Everybody who's about to lose control, relax. It's Reese on the radio on blogtalkradio.com. I wanted to say something outrageous, and I apologize to anybody who's thinking, what the hell? We're back. It was a long weekend. If anybody checked out Reese on the radio on Facebook, you saw a couple of videos that I posted of my nephew, Liam. If I may, I'd like to begin my opening monologue by talking about my nephew. And I might filibuster a little bit and talk about him for a long time. But it's important for me to let this out. Radio is my therapy. This is why I came up with Therapy Thursday. I know I haven't done Therapy Thursday in a while, but I promise you, we'll bring it back. But allow me to talk about my nephew for a little while. And just understand where it is that I'm coming from here. My nephew Liam is 2 years old, just a little older than 2 years old. And you've seen the videos on Facebook. Just log on to Reese on the Radio and you'll see the videos. And he is, in a lot of ways, my savior. With all of the things that are happening in my life and everything that happens in most people's lives, some people need that one thing that they can focus on that gives them meaning, gives them purpose, I guess is the best way to put it. And Liam, in a lot of ways, I wish I could have recorded every moment that I had with him while I was with him this weekend. I wish I would have recorded every moment. In a lot of ways, I didn't want to put a camera down. I just wanted to document all of it. Liam, as a young man, as a little boy, a baby, if you will, everything about him is simplistic. He's... You can watch a person learn. With Liam, I'll give it to you this way. Liam and I played this game on Sunday where I stuck out my hand and he would slap me five. And when he went to go slap me five, I'd move my hand away so he would miss. And for a two-year-old baby, to acknowledge that the objective was to hit the hand before it moved, he caught on in seconds, and I was moving my hand away, and he was tempering his response. He knew I was going to move my hand, and he reached out, and he tried to psych me out. It for a two-year-old to recognize that, to go, I get it, you're psyching me out. You're going to move your hand before I can hit it. So I have to hit you faster before you move your hand.
he caught on in seconds. And he made a game out of it. And he figured it out. I mean, it was amazing to me. He figured it out. He's a sponge, this kid, Liam. He's a sponge. He understands. He gets it. He's so bright. He's so smart. And I know a lot of people say that about your kids and their kids and everybody. I guess it's not to belittle or demean anybody else's child. What I really want to say is that if your child is like Liam and you've experienced those things, if you see that youth and innocence and bravery and smarts, and you want to shout it to the rafters, look how intelligent he is. Nobody should begrudge you that. They are brilliant. Babies are brilliant. They have a better brilliance than the rest of us do, than a lot of us do. They are so brilliant. But what we've done in our society is we've bastardized that. We've manipulated and we've destroyed it. We've done so many things to destroy that learning. And in that 20 minutes that I played with Liam, my nephew, in that little game, and every time he did hit my hand, because I am quicker than him, but he manipulated the situation to the point where he caught my hand. I'll admit, maybe out of 20 times, he caught my hand 7. But when he caught my hand, when he went to go slap my hand, and I was moving it away, and he waited for me to come back, and he negotiated it. And he would hit my hand. He was so excited that he won. He was so excited that he accomplished it, that he won. And he laughed. He laughed like the court. He laughed like the Joker. He laughed because he knew he got me. And I laughed with him. I laughed so hard that he got, because I was proud of him. I was proud that he recognized that he had done something, he had accomplished something. I felt good to have taught him about winning and losing and missing and all that other stuff. It was such an amazing feat for me to see that. Now, look, I'm never going to have another child. I mean, I got a 20-year-old, you know, Caleb, who's going to be doing radio in a couple of weeks, and he's going to be an amazing radio host, and I know it. But the rest of you out there who are really, really thinking about whether or not your life is complete, whether or not your life could ever be complete, find your purpose in reaching a very, very young child, a young person, and go out there and make a difference. Go out there and be a part of that. If you're a really, really good person, a good guy, a good gal, go out there and be a part of your sister's son or daughter, your brother's son or daughter. Go out there and make yourself available to them. You'll understand how important your influence is on them. In playing games and making them laugh and making them or helping them challenge themselves. This past weekend was such a revelation for me. He is my favorite nephew, and he'll probably grow up to be a real angry piece of shit.
No, he won't.
No, even if he does.
He will
but
not.
No, 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 but even if he does, there'll be a memory that will never, ever be taken away from me. It'll never, ever change. And that memory changed my life this weekend. It did. It really changed my life. Don't ever walk away from an opportunity to be in that moment with a young little baby, a young child. Watch them develop. You'll learn a lot about yourself. I promise you, you will. You learn a lot about who it is that you are. I spent 2 days with this boy, and I've spent plenty of days with him back in November of last year. I saw him every day. Sometimes he just got on my damn nerves. And then I missed him, and then I saw him this weekend, and I realized how important and how relevant he is into molding me. I've always been a big fan of kids. I've always been a big fan of them. Children are pure and honest, whether it be cruel or unjust or bullying, whatever, but kids are pure. You see what it is that they're going to be or who it is that they're going to be by watching them at their youth. But they're like clay. If you as an adult or somebody who's an influence on those children, if you really care about them and care about their lives and care about their well-being, you'll mold them into the individuals that you can appreciate and love and respect. You have a position in making the world a better place through our children. And I look at Liam this weekend, and I feel like I did a little bit. Even if it was 0.1%, I feel like I did a little bit. Look at those videos on Recent Radio on Facebook. Just look at those videos. Just watch that. Watch him and our exchange. And the way that I talk to him and the way that I communicate with him, I know I'm, most people would say, like, wow, Reese is really, like, he's really brutal. No, but I deal with him like I would talk to any other adult, but he responds to that well, and he has a good time, and he smiles. But you need to watch those videos. I put those videos up there because I believe in our future. I believe in our children. And all I want them to do is just make the world a better place than when I got here. And I think that my nephew Liam, and watching him and watching him play and hearing him laugh, even listening to him cry and be upset and be angry, I'm so proud of the fact that I get to be his uncle. I'm the luckiest man in the world that I get to be his uncle, that I get to be a part of his life. I don't know whether or not I'd be able to deal with the things in my life if I didn't have a guy like Liam in it. He not only makes me live another day, he makes me hope for a better one. And he's really, really important to me. I don't want him to be important to everybody else, but he's really important to me. He makes me do better and want better. And that's what every child should do to anyone who has one or has one in their lives. Should make you want better and do better. I'm so lucky. I'm the luckiest man in the world. I'm the luckiest man in the world because I met Liam. And every hug and every kiss and every laugh and every joke makes my life a better place to be. And he's my hero. I love you, Liam. I just had to say that. I know it sounds corny, but, you know, not like I really, really give a crap.
And thank you to my wife for surprising me because my sister and nephew came for the weekend.
Yeah, for some odd reason, we have to play a bumper.
Somebody who believes in us. Someone who believes that achievement should be rewarded, not punished.
We need somebody who believes in America.
The idea to say that Steve Jobs didn't build Apple, that Henry Ford didn't build Ford Motor, to say something like that is not just foolishness, it's insulting to every entrepreneur, every innovator in America. It's wrong. President Obama attacks success, and therefore, under President Obama, we have less success, and I will change that.
This is Bob. Bob is a normal guy. He has a good job. He works hard to provide for his family. And he tries to keep himself informed on current events. There's just one problem. I don't think President Obama is doing a very good job. Bob is a racist. There's nothing worse than having a racist around saying hateful things. I don't think it's unreasonable for people to have to show ID when they go vote. Whoa, Bob. Slow down with the bigotry for just a minute. People like Bob are still very upset that there's a black man in the White House. As a result, they oppose President Obama's policies. Not because they're bad policies, but because they just don't like black people. How could anyone oppose such great policies? They're awesome and are working super well. But how do I talk about my political beliefs without being a racist? Let's give Bob a few pointers on how not to be racist. Did you know that under President Obama, more people are on food stamps than ever before? Bob, that's racist. Just because something is true doesn't mean that it's not bigoted. But how can something be racist if it's true? That's a racist question. We need to secure our southern border to stem the tide of illegal immigration. Racist! Calling undocumented workers illegal simply because they're here illegally is proof that you hate Mexicans.
My adopted son is Mexican.
Doesn't matter, still racist.
I see.
I like Barack Obama. He's a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect.
Now that's racist. Nope, not so fast there, Bob. It's only racist if it's said by someone who doesn't support President Obama and his policies. Susie is a Democrat, so it's okay if she says it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. A liberal can't be racist. It's not possible because liberals support the things that are good for the black community.
So, a conservative and a liberal can say exactly the same thing, but only the conservative is racist for saying it.
Now you're getting it, Bobby. For example, When a conservative politician says something that's not directly racist, but is construed that way by liberals, he loses his job, like Majority Leader Trent Lott. But when a Democrat in the same position turns out to be a former Klansman, like Majority Leader Robert Byrd, he's a liberal hero!
It's all starting to make sense now, so I can say all sorts of racist stuff as long as I vote for the right people.
Right! So if Susie says,
I am so proud of myself for voting in the first African American president in 2008.
Her statement has no racial implications whatsoever. But if someone says,
I voted for Barack Obama last time, but I'm thinking about voting for Mitt Romney this year.
That person is totally racist.
Hold on a second. How can someone who voted for Barack Obama the first time be racist just because they don't vote for him this time? They obviously didn't care about his skin color before.
Sometimes people don't realize that they're racist until later.
How can someone become racist in 4 years?
That's a clown question, bro.
I'm so confused. I don't want to see the country go down the toilet, but I also don't want the people at work to think I'm a racist.
Well, remember, Bob, if the country is ruined, you can always blame it on George W. Bush.
You're right! I'm gonna vote for Barack Obama because I'm not a racist.
Way to go, Bobby. Remember, racism in the workplace is never cool.
I'm Barack Obama, and I've never seen this ad. Didn't even know it existed.
Hey, homie.
Look what I got. Just for you, bro.
Fist bump. But the GOP is going to put you all back in chains.
Minutes after the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the radio. It's August 27, 2012. Now, I know that everyone is talking the whole weekend, trust me, I know, about our conversation with the new Black Panther Party. We'll get into that in the 9 o'clock hour. I promise you we will. And we are going to have another conversation with them this coming week. Mary, are you going to set that up?
New Black Panther Party?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Mary's going to set that up. We're going to try to do something incredible with we're just going to do something incredible. I got to play this audio because I believe that this audio is important. We always talk about racism here on Reason Radio. We have no fear about racism. It's racism all the time on Reason Radio. And this is a report that I saw back in 2009. And I think that each and every one of you should hear it. Because it's one of those things that make me go, Because racism is an important part of our lives, especially when it comes to blacks. So I'm going to play this audio, and you tell me what it is that you think when you hear it. You can, of course, always log on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com, or you can send us an email at ReeseOnTheRadio@yahoo.com. Pay attention to the story.
Although this study was released this week in Los Angeles just today, it hasn't received much play in the news media, and the authors know why. They say it deals with a very delicate issue and some misunderstandings that ethnic group activists say must no longer be ignored. Southern California, the most diverse region in the nation, a symphony of cultures and colors. But while there have been studies as to how whites relate to non-whites, this is the first survey that explores attitudes among the ethnic groups themselves.
1,100 interviews. It was a very scientific poll.
The poll, sponsored by the New America Media, indicates there are serious tensions and negative stereotypes among blacks, Hispanics, and Asian Americans. For example, a majority of African Americans and near majority of Hispanics, saying they aren't treated with respect at Asian-run businesses. And a majority of African Americans, including Latino immigrants, are taking jobs, housing, and political influence from blacks. And Hispanics and Asians, to a large degree, believe...
Oh, come on.
African Americans are more prone to crime. Those behind the study believe much of the problem is with ethnic media.
For example, in the Korean media specifies an assailant, Korean student assailed, assaulted by Hispanic. The Chinese media will cover one incident, African American robber, will create a negative stereotype that just gets deeper and deeper.
As a rule, each of the ethnic groups trust whites more than they do each other, by wide margins. 61% of Hispanics would trust whites to do business with, only 3% trusting African Americans. A majority of Asian Americans would trust whites, only 3% trusting blacks, 7% Hispanics. Only 6% of blacks would prefer to do business with Asian Americans. And although less than half of African Americans believe that if you work hard, you can succeed, a vast majority of immigrants, particularly Hispanics, Filipinos, and Vietnamese, believe in the American dream.
They are so tremendously committed to the notion that they can rebuild their lives, they can make a better life for their children.
Most polled believe race relations will get better over time. We'll have more on this issue on news conference Sunday morning at 9:30 here on NBC4. Paul Colleen.
All right, Colonel.
Okay, so NBC4 did this whole bit breakdown. Now, I saw this poll back in 2009. Is that even though African Americans do not like whites, they would easily do business with whites more than they would any other ethnicity. Now, if you were to ask most African Americans, you know, whites are, you know, they're the devil, and, you know, they will use and abuse blacks, but they trust whites when it comes to business. Why?
Well, that doesn't even make any sense, though.
Of course it doesn't, Mary.
Because
come on.
The reason why you would say that it's the white man is keeping me down. If the white man is keeping you down, then why are you buying product from him?
Oh, very good. That's a very good point. But they don't you think that the reason why they're doing these things with white Americans is because, bottom line, that they know that whites are more prone to better business practices?
Yeah, but they're contradicting themselves. If you think that whites are... into better business practices, then it can't be the white man holding you down.
Oh, very good. This is all obvious. They don't trust anybody else. They don't trust... I wish that this survey would have said Asian to Asian, black to black. They didn't do that, though. They did not do that. But in every survey with every minority group, they all overwhelmingly supported whites doing business with them. In other words, they would rather have a white person as a business partner than they did their own race.
Well, of course they would.
Isn't that a bad sign?
A bad sign for who?
For the minorities.
For whitey or blackie?
Well, no. Remember, the whites are supposed to be the bad people. According to these minorities, whites are the oppressors. Why do they choose to do work or have business practices?
Because they probably didn't poll any of the people that didn't have anything. It's only African Americans that don't have anything, that don't want to work to get anything, that run around talking about it's the white man's fault, I ain't got nothing. It's only lazy people, not all black people.
But if a black person were to walk up to another black person and say, I have a business proposition, and a white person were to walk up to them and say, I have a business proposition, they're saying 61% that blacks would work with the white guy before they work with their own. So what does that mean? I mean, what does that really mean? Does that...
You know what it means?
Go ahead, JC.
It means, I think, Phillips, though, that the chances for success are greater.
the chances of success are greater with the white person than they are with blacks, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so with that being said, okay, and that's a fact, they believe that the white person is more business savvy than a black person would be. Right?
And will work harder. And will work harder. And I already feel that that whitey will always give whitey a rub. So that as far as in terms of furthering that success and getting business contacts and so on and so forth, they feel they have a better chance.
Well, yes. They believe that. See, here's the bottom line, and blacks don't have enough guts to admit it, is that when it comes to business, they know that whites dominate that world. And if they are wishing to be entrepreneurs, if they are wishing to be successful in this country, they will never go to their own in order to do it. This is the reason why
Then they can never complain that the white man is keeping them down, because it's the black man keeping you down.
According to their own,
because the black man don't want to do business with another black man. The black man said no. The white man got better credit. The white man got better connects. The white man is more likely to care about his money. So I'm going with the white.
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious. So this is
I'm not saying I agree with that.
You know what? That's why it's likely that you'll never, ever hear those words come out of Russell Simmons' mouth.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. You'll never hear those words come out of Russell Simmons' mouth that he would do business with a black person. Black-owned businesses won't do – I mean, come on. Russell Simmons sold that whole Argyle thing to Kmart, for crying out loud. Who did he sell it to? He didn't sell it to FUBU. He didn't sell it and the owner of FUBU, Damon, who's the owner of FUBU, that guy's a $500 million guy. And he didn't sell that to FUBU. He didn't sell it to a black-owned business. He sold it to a white-owned business. So my argument is that if they're talking all this crap,
Wait, Russell Simmons is selling Argyle?
That Fat Farm Argyle thing that he was doing? He sold to Kmart. Yeah.
How sad is that?
But he did it he branded himself with a white organization.
But he branded himself at Kmart.
But why do you think he did that?
Kmart sucks.
But he did the Kmart thing because it's a broader brand. It's a big box.
And truth be told, he kind of hid by Rick Rubin until they were successful anyways.
Exactly. Rick Rubin, exactly. Russell Simmons became the brand that he is with Def Jam because of, you got a white guy to, of course, brand that group. And then Rick Rubin leaves and makes Def America. And Rick Rubin is probably one of the most successful producers in the game today. Dixie Chicks and so on and so forth. But the bottom line is that as much as these people talk behind the scenes about how we need to have a broader expansion of black businesses, the only way that we broaden them is by doing business with white people. And that's what this statistic is showing. This statistic is showing, as much as they hem and haw about how we need to have more black-owned businesses, the bottom line is they don't even do business with black-owned businesses. They don't. And they're bullshitting the rest of the public. That's the part that makes me angry. In order for you to be successful today, why is it that more blacks, more Latinos, more Asians are doing business with white folks than it is with their own people and then complaining about it at the same time? It's hypocritical for each and every one of them to do that.
Yeah, they're definitely not being exclusive to black people.
Oh, of course not.
As a matter of fact, they're probably avoiding that.
Oh, that's because the quote-unquote hip-hop or black community is fickle. What's popular to them today is dead on arrival 6 months from now, if not shorter. So that's the whole point, is that why is it that minorities...
And a business person, the bottom line is that a business person, whether you black, white, Jewish, Spanish, whatever, a business person is in business to make profit. So you're going to go where you can have the highest return.
You're absolutely right.
They ain't thinking about color. They I'm gonna go with the black guy, not the white guy, because he's black. But if I go with the white guy, I'm gonna get 50% more in return versus, you know, a 30% more with the black guy. You're going to go with the white guy.
Let's
because
go.
Because you're thinking about lining your pockets, not lining other black people's pockets.
Let's go to our political and sometimes racist analyst from Florida, Mike.
Oh, man. I was laughing so hard when that news story played and the apologist came on and said, well, you know, the reason there are negative attitudes towards blacks and Hispanics among the Koreans and Asians is because when they report on the story, they will say, oh, a Hispanic or a black person robbed the store. So let me get this straight. The fact that blacks and Hispanics are robbing the Koreans isn't what's creating the negative image. It's the fact that the media reports that it's a black or Hispanic that creates a negative image.
Right, exactly.
You know, I have a friend who's Korean. Right? He was born in Korea, but came here at 2 years old. His family, like, had been through the Korean War because his dad's kind of old. They came from, you know, destroyed Korea. They moved here to Florida. And when they moved here, they were poor, you know, trying to start their business. So they had to live in South St. Petersburg, which is, shall we say, a dark area. Do you okay. care to guess what one of the first English words his Korean father learned how to say was?
Please tell me.
No, you say it, because I can't say it, but you can say it.
Nigga!
Yep.
Why can't you say it?
You can say it
you
on my show.
It's a nigga. That's what they called him.
It's really
well,
funny
what
when
learned,
he says it.
Was the word nigga.
Because he'll talk in Korean, and then he'll say, whoa, these are goddamn nigga. Hates him. He is the most racist person I know, and he's like a 5'2", hunched-over Korean man who speaks maybe 20 words of English, but he knows nigger.
The first word he learned was nigger.
Pretty close. He dealt with them for about 2 weeks, and he said, well, what do you call these people? Yeah, but, you know, seriously, man, you know as well as I do that black people are really racist against Asian people.
Oh,
you
absolutely.
Know, they bust out that Ching Chong, Kung Fu, Chow Mein nonsense. They're totally racist against Asian people.
And well,
the reason they don't like them
coming
in here.
They're racist everybody, though, Mike, honestly. I mean, you can't walk into an Asian restaurant and fill out an application and expect to get a job.
Well, there's white people working at Asian restaurants down here, I have to say.
Really?
But to be fair,
that's
I probably
there's
couldn't.
A shortage, that's because there's a shortage of Asians in Florida, obviously.
No, there's no shortage. It's just, you know, there may be a shortage of them actually where I am. They actually want to be waiters or whatever. Yeah, it's just a trip, man. I mean, it just amazes me that somebody can come from, I don't know, India. And the thing about Indians, man, is the Indians we get, they're basically black. I mean, there's that whole caste system of Indians. And the ones that seem to run convenience stores are, you know, they're Sammy Davis Jr. colored. So they're basically black. But the blacks
don't
like
them,
and they don't like the blacks. And it's like, no, we're exactly the same
color. Don't tell them they're black, Mike,
because
they don't like that shit.
Mike, let me ask you a question. Are you stunned at this report that says that over 60% of every, I mean, in essence, every ethnic group that they studied in this survey, they all said we'd rather do business with whites, but traditionally we believe that whites are the most racist. Isn't that odd that they would call them the most racist, but they do the most business with them? This sounds
well,
like,
yeah.
Well, because this is the thing. They don't care about the racism. All they care about is the dead president. So when it really comes down to it, your ass don't care if somebody likes you or doesn't like you because of the skin of your color. As long as you helping me put money in my pocket and food on my table and clothes on my back, I don't give a damn.
So you're saying that they're willing to wash away the whole racism
thing? They're willing to turn a blind eye to that. Because then it's convenient for them.
Well, in essence, couldn't we find a way to monopolize on that ideal and say, look, isn't the whole thing that you're doing here based upon your finances, on how much you can expand your business or expand your prosperity? Couldn't we embark on some sort of conversation with those people and go, look, I know you don't like whites, but you trust whites overwhelmingly when it comes to business, so why can't you trust them to do that and forget about this ideological thing when it comes to race?
But they do put their ideological views away. They put them in their back pocket when there's somebody putting money in their wallet.
Well, now, look, you have to realize that Asian people like white people, and that's about it.
Right.
Of the ethnic groups out there, they like us. They don't like blacks. They don't like Mexicans. I don't know how they feel about the Indians, you know, the Texaco Indians. But Asian people like white people a lot. You know, we are their favorite.
I look at this whole thing every time I watch it and surveys like this. And I found this. The reason why I know about this survey was because I got this almanac from England who did the survey. And when I watched it, I was in jail at the time. A friend of mine sent it to me. And I read the survey. And I went, wow, that's an amazing statistic. It was one of those odd statistics that was there. And I said, wait a minute. So when they talked about trust, each and every one of the minorities had this high mark for white people about distrust. It was like 60, 70%. But then when the question came to business and business practices, it was as high. And I said, how can you not like these people because they're white, but trust them when it came to business? I almost felt like it was some sort of deal where they thought as I want to use the word stereotype.
Well,
that whites are better at business than everybody
else.
Well,
it's not that white. Okay, listen. Well, I don't. Whatever. I don't know. But the reason why it is that way is because society has made white people out to be the bad guy. Everybody thinks that whitey wants to be the supreme being, and all whitey wants is to make money and prosper. Just like everybody else should want to do.
Yeah, but when a white person talks about making money and prospering, it's considered racist. It's considered...
That's jealousy and hatred.
I'm not disagreeing with you there. I'm just saying that it's based on... For them, they believe it's greed. They attribute white success with greed. If a white person makes a whole lot of money... He's greedy. Oh, he's got more money than he can spend. It's greedy.
And if a black person
makes a whole lot of money, that nigga's just coming out of slavery. He can have as much money. I want to give you a perfect example. And I did this on resellerradio.com. And the headline on resellerradio.com is, are they too rich to relate? Because the argument was Mitt Romney's worth $250 million. But Jay-Z, he's worth $500 million. 50 Cent, $250 million. P. Diddy, he's worth $250 million. Why are they not too rich to relate? They got more money than Mitt Romney. Why is it that they're not too rich to relate? So they say it's because Jay-Z sold crack.
You were talking about Russell Simmons earlier? And, you know, Russell Simmons runs that stupid Global Grind website. He put out some tweet today because it was, again, you know, like a Congo bloodbath in Chicago over the weekend.
Right.
You know, 36 people got shot, and one of whom was a 13-year-old boy or something. Well, Russell, you know, puts out, oh, you know, no 13-year-old should get shot, and that's too young. And all I'm thinking is, you asshole, you did this. You are largely responsible for poisoning black culture with rap music. And now just because you wear a stupid Argyle vest and do yoga and date no black women, I'm supposed to believe you give a crap about the community?
You know,
he poisoned the well.
Exactly. poisoned the well. But that's the thing. He poisoned the well and stepped away, and not one person has ever scrutinized him for it.
Yeah, he lived in the Hamptons. He was talking about how, oh, I spend my weekends in the Hamptons with my daughters and these poor kids in Chicago. It's like, dude, if not for you and the stupid hip-hop, maybe the black family would be a little better off. They wouldn't be capping each other in the street like it's, you know, Black Hawk Down.
Russell Simmons, when I was with Star and Buck Wild, Russell Simmons was on our show. And you know what he said on the show? He had a campaign called The Hood is Good. And in essence, all he was saying was that hood behavior, that's a good thing. We need that. We need that sort of, we need a counterculture. And he was belligerent about it. And I kept saying to him over and over again, how the hell could this be good for our culture? The hood is good. The hood is good, he said. That's all he ever said. The hood is good. He liked that counterculture.
Yeah, the hood is good because they robbing each other to buy your shit.
He's profiting from it. He's profiting from it.
So
you know
who's
what's good?
Exploiting their
jazz
own people?
Was good. You know, jazz was good. I mean, it may have been like reefer smoking and heroin shooting, but jazz wasn't about, as you say, bang, bang, shoot 'em up, nigga, die slow.
You
know,
right.
Funk was good. Hell, even disco was good. But this hip-hop hood crap where it glorifies the absolute basest elements of our society, those people need to be held accountable. Russell Simmons and Jay-Z and all these guys, Dr. Dre with his fake gangsterness. You know, we all saw the album cover where he was wearing spandex and sparkly eyeshadow.
As we all know, hip-hop has not always been like that. When hip-hop first came out, hip-hop was about hip-hop. This shit that they're putting out is about making money, and it's more black people exposing other blacks to shit that isn't going to do anything but ruin their own culture.
Well, hell, on Global Grind today, on the same page where he's crying about the dead 13-year-old, there's a story about AIDS in the black community. And he's got a picture of Eazy-E holding 245s. Like we're supposed to cry about Eazy-E, who has at the forefront of gangster rap.
Yeah, he is. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. You nailed it on that one.
The strap part is he couldn't even rap.
You want to cry about AIDS, strap on a Jimmy hat, my man.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. I want to play a song that Mike introduced me to today. I've got to play this
love
song.
It.
I love it.
Love it.
It's called Blame It on the Push. Stick around. We'll be right back. It's Reset Radio.
Approaching Blaine Station, Hope and Change Street.
Hey, Mr. President, can you tell me just what happened? 'Cause you made so many promises, and now it seems you were just yapping. What happened to transparency? It's still as thick as fog. Did you really believe it? You could get us off the ground. Come on, you didn't mean it. You could spread the wealth around. We couldn't read the bills. They had to pass them in a hurry. It must be nice to know that you don't. defending Eric Holder will think you're fast and furious. You can hide behind the nonsense if you protect the middle class, but to blame it all on millionaires will bite you in the ass. Did you really believe it that Solyndra was a gem? Come on, you didn't mean it when you blamed the ATMs. You can't believe the Tea Party doesn't see us the Messiah. You should have thought of that when you prayed with Jeremiah.
Dan Rather, who canceled his appearance on The Factor, talked with Jon Stewart about liberalism in the national media.
I know what it's why they believe that CBS, NBC, ABC, chock full of liberals. Not true. But chock full of people wanted to give honest news, straightforward news, and voted both ways in many elections. I'm not saying that nobody in the newsroom was liberal any more than I say anybody conservative. Frequently what happens, people who are described as us and conservatives want to say, I work at CBS News and you know almost everybody there was liberal. Mm-hmm. What they really mean is not everybody there agreed with them all the time. This is a sham.
All right, with all due respect to Mr. Rather, his statement is a sham. He's not telling the truth. Here are the facts. After the presidential race between George Bush and John Kerry, the University of Connecticut surveyed 300 journalists nationwide. The study found that 52% of the journalists voted for Kerry. Just 19% went for Bush. The rest would not answer the question. In 2008, NBC News identified 143 journalists who made political contributions. 125 of them gave to the Democratic Party. Just 16 out of 143 donated to the Republican Party. Two gave to both parties. Also in 2008, the Pew Research Center studied 43 news outlets in America in the run-up to the Obama-McCain election. About 35% of the stories done on Barack Obama by those organizations were positive. Less than 20% were positive when it came to John McCain. Those are the facts, Mr. Rather, and they're grim if you believe the media should be fair and balanced. Just today, the website Politico ran a story about how the Washington Post is covering Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. Post reporter David Moranis has a new book out called Barack Obama, The Story. In that book, Moranis documents the president's drug use as a young man. It was extensive. The Washington Post ran that story on page 6. But earlier this month, the Post ran a 5,500-word story on page 1 detailing Mitt Romney's high school hazing resume. I mean, come on. Fair-minded people know that much of the media is actively working to see that Barack Obama is reelected. Dan Rather would never admit that, but it's absolutely true. So the question becomes, how much will the liberal press influence the election?
Five minutes to the top of the hour. It's Reese on the radio. I hope you like that song by The Voters, which is called Blame It on Bush, which I have to play again because I want to make sure that everybody hears that song. You have to hear every damn word of that song because a lot of these knuckleheads out there need to hear it, but, you know. They all turn around and say, don't like Barack Obama, racist. But it's a good song, and I have to play it. And I have to thank Mike in Florida for actually sending it to me because I love it. I like the video, too. The video's pretty good, too. Check it out on YouTube. Song's called Blame It on Bush. And it breaks down pretty much the entire administration. And that's the reason why I play it, because I enjoyed it. And it's got a pretty good, it's got a catchy hook. At least I think so. Not a lot of people out there have been able to come up with these anti-Obama songs that I can appreciate. So, listen to it again. Enjoy it. We'll be back. Top of the hour. Reese on the radio.
Approaching Blaine Station. Hope and Change Street.
Hey, Mr. President, can you tell me just what happened? 'Cause you made so many promises, and now it seems you were just yapping. What happened to Guantanamo? What happened to transparency? It's still as thick as fog. Did you really believe it? You can get us off the ground. Come on, you didn't mean it. You can spread the wealth around. We couldn't read the bills. They had to pass them in a hurry. It must be nice to know that you don't have to worry. To break.
I didn't vote for you.
Waiting list, and every child has to be voted in. On top of all that, it costs $1,000 a week to go to Camp Mohawk. The question is it worth $1,000 a week?
It sure is. It's the best darn camp there is.
Well, are you connected with Camp Mohawk?
Well, I think so. I'm the program director.
Well, how do you justify $1,000 a week?
Well, we have some special programs. We're doing Shakespeare in the Round again this year, of course. Our political roundtable, Henry Kissinger will appear. He's going to come out, spend a weekend with the kids, just rap with them.
That's amazing.
And the kids wanted animals, so this year each camper will stalk and kill his own bear in our private wildlife preserve.
Are you sure the children can hack that?
We'll see. But the real excitement, of course, is going to come at the end of the summer, during Sexual Awareness Week. We import 200 hookers from around the world, and each camper, armed with only a thermos of coffee and $2,000 cash, tries to visit as many countries as he can. And the winner, of course, is named King of Sexual Awareness Week and is allowed to rape and pillage the neighboring towns until camp ends.
That's incredible.
What do you expect for $1,000 a week? Hey, you have a good summer, too, huh?
It's the end of the summer. All the kids are back in school. And guess what? First day of school in Baltimore, some radical Negro has fired upon a student and shot them. The kid didn't die, thank goodness. But some lunatic went into the first day of school and shot somebody. Did you see that in Baltimore?
I did. I actually. What time did it happen?
Well, it was in Maryland, but it was close to Baltimore.
It was in Baltimore.
Was it in Baltimore?
Yeah. What time did this happen?
Early, like 9, 10 o'clock.
Pretty sure I saw the helicopter flying over the medevac.
Did you?
Because I was working right almost in Baltimore today. I think actually it's Baltimore County.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but you know what? The kids can't even go to school anymore, especially if you're in one of these Negro states. I'm sorry, folks. You may not like the fact that I said that. But the bottom line is...
I mean, white kids, hey, at least they only shot one kid. If it had been a white kid, you'd have had a slew of people.
You're probably right. You're probably right about that. You're absolutely right about that. Hey, listen, you know, on this show, on Recent Radio, we always talk about liars. And most people are saying it's like, oh, it's because of Reese's own personal, you know, situation. But I like exposing liars. And when liars...
I do, too.
You do, too?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that?
Love it, because I hate liars.
Okay. I'm very, very caught up in the whole liar thing. Here's why. It's because even when they're caught, they refuse to just acknowledge that they're liars. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is the chair of the Democratic National Committee, she was on Anderson Cooper 360 last week. And Anderson took her to task on an email that she sent out to supporters about a Los Angeles Times article. And in his conversation with her, she refused to acknowledge that she lied. Now, this is a long clip. But I want you to hear the exchange. It's important that you hear it.
In the wake of the comments made by Congressman Aiken on abortion, you've been sending out fundraising appeals that attempt to link Mitt Romney with Congressman Aiken, even Paul Ryan's position on abortion. You do acknowledge that Mitt Romney supports abortion in the cases of rape, incest, and the life of the mother. don't you?
Well, I think that women need to know the dramatic difference between President Obama's position on a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices, as well as the Democratic Party's position, and Mitt Romney and the Republican Party. And so Mitt Romney's words are very nice, but the bottom line is that his campaign just directed the Republican Party platform to include the most restrictive constitutional amendment that would say to women that you would have no opportunity to make your own reproductive choices under...
Flat out lie. Mitt Romney has expressed that he believed that abortion is okay for those who are victims of rape, incest, or the life of the mother. That is a fact. He's made that clear. But she's saying that he's now adopted the Republican Party platform, which we know is bull. But she keeps going. Can we get a play on there? Come on, press play. Oh, don't do this to me now. Come on. All right, it's going to play now. I apologize, guys. I really, really do apologize. Here we go. Okay.
Stop pressing.
Even in the case of rape or incest.
But wait a minute. You're saying his campaign...
Absolutely silent and makes no exception at all.
You're saying his campaign directed... You're saying his campaign directed the writing the platform... And that's the claim you make in your fundraising.
That's the responsibility of a...
But it's not. I mean,
right.
You're saying... It was,
that's the responsibility of a presidential campaign.
But factually speaking, Mitt Romney did not design or direct the writing of the Republican Party platform. In particular, the language on abortion is the same
that
as it's been for years. Are you saying that he wrote in 2000 or 2004 and 2008? Because it's the same language. And according to our reporters who were in the room, as the platform was being discussed, people could suggest changes, and the Romney campaign did suggest changes to a few sections, but they didn't say anything about the abortion language. And you can fault them, as you did, for not pushing their position, but you can't say they designed the abortion section.
Anderson, we definitely can say it, because even in the previous platform, Mitt Romney has embraced previous Republican Party platforms and embraced that language and said he'd be delighted to support a constitutional amendment banning all abortion. He supported personhood amendments. I mean, there's no getting around.
But he has also vocally for years.
Policy.
Sorry, I don't want to speak over you, but he has for years, you have to acknowledge, he has for years publicly said that he supports abortion in the case of rape, incest, and where the life of the mother is at stake.
I can certainly acknowledge that he says that out loud, and I think it's very clear that Mitt Romney talks the talk, certainly doesn't walk the walk. He has fully embraced his party's platform that includes a constitutional amendment banning all forms of abortion, including with no exception for rape or incest.
I guess I don't understand why in a fundraising appeal you would, it seems, maybe accidentally, but you completely misquote the LA Times. You make it sound as if they're saying something that they're not saying, and you're using that as evidence to back up your position.
Anderson, it doesn't matter any way you
slice it. What matters, I mean...
I had a pause there. She goes, it doesn't matter that I misquoted them. It doesn't matter. Anderson, I don't give a crap if I misquoted them. I got a job to do here, Anderson. And the job is to fool these women.
I can't believe that Barack Obama made this moron the chair.
No, she's not. No, he didn't make her the chair. The party did.
Well, they're idiots.
No, she can't even speak. She said, I don't care. I don't care what it is that the LA Times says. I'm going to manipulate their words into what it is that I think it should say. This is a woman who's lying, knows it, and doesn't care. I don't care what they said in the LA Times. I'm going to manipulate it in any way I want. Listen more. Trust me, Anderson goes off. Trust me. Watch Anderson. Come on, play, please. Damn it, I hate this computer.
It's not the computer, it's Skype.
Is it Skype?
Yeah, it's that plug-in.
Is that what's doing it?
Yeah.
You have to hear the rest of this.
It's Google Chrome and Skype.
I just wanted you to hear what it is that she says after the fact. It's just brilliant.
It's brilliant because she's a moron. And I just want
proof of your position, and it's actually not proof of your position.
Email? The reason that we sent out that email and that we will continue to send out emails and reach out to voters is we want them to know the difference between the two parties and the two parties' candidates on a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices, and that Mitt Romney has a very extreme position on that
right.
issue.
But just as
and
you don't like being
that,
misquoted, I don't like being misquoted, I'm sure the LA Times doesn't like being misquoted to back up a position, your political position. I don't understand why you would need to do
there
that.
There is no getting around, I'm sorry, there's no getting around that Mitt Romney, when he accepts his party's nomination for President of the United States next week, and they adopt that platform, which has no exception for rape or incest in it, that is Mitt Romney's platform. And, you know, to suggest anything else is absolutely ludicrous, and it would be different than any other previous party convention.
Do you at least acknowledge that
and people
the
should
quote
know that.
That you gave from the LA Times is completely incorrect?
No, I don't acknowledge that. I know that's what you're saying, but
I can read it to you right now.
That,
I mean, what you said is, guess what? The LA Times reported yesterday that the platform
what I'm
was.
It doesn't matter.
Well, I think what you say does matter. You're quoting the LA Times.
That's the part. She says it doesn't matter. She said it doesn't matter. I don't give a shit what they say. It doesn't matter. I got an agenda here, Anderson. Get with the program, Negro.
And again, you've misquoted them. And to back up a position.
The point, Anderson, the point of the email, and there's no getting around that, and I would think you would agree, that there's no way that a presidential candidate, a party's nominee, can separate themselves from that party's platform.
Well,
there is no exception
he has. I mean,
for
he,
rape or
he,
incest in the Human Life Amendment.
Right.
But
he
hasn't
has
insisted
himself.
That his own party's platform, but no, he hasn't, because he hasn't insisted that he had an opportunity during the drafting of that platform language to make sure that his own view, if that really is his view, is in that party's platform's language. And it isn't. He didn't do that. Neither did his campaign team.
Before
that's
we go,
why we sent the email.
I do
because
just,
I want to make sure women know that.
But you sent the email to raise funds, and you're misusing a quote. And I do think accuracy is important, and my job is to point out things that are not factually correct. What you said, guess what?
Accuracy
the Los Angeles Times reported yesterday that the platform was, and I quote, written at the direction of Romney's campaign. That sounds very direct, but that's not actually what the LA Times
Anderson,
was saying. That's not what they
the
actually
bottom
said.
Line, the
but,
bottom line message.
The bottom line,
okay.
What they said is delegates for presumptive nominee Mitt Romney are voting down substantive changes to the platform language that was written at the direction of the Romney's campaign. They're not saying they wrote all the language. They're just saying specific language that the Romney campaign wrote, their surrogates.
Oh, come on. Don't pause now. That's a good part coming up.
They're voting down and abortion language that was not part of that.
Anderson, the bottom line message of our email is that, A, women need to know the difference between the two parties and the two presidential candidates on a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices, and that Mitt Romney can say that he's for an exception for rape or incest. His party platform doesn't reflect that. He has previously fully embraced a Human Life Amendment with no exception and said he'd be delighted to support it, and women need to know the difference, and women need to know that Mitt Romney is simply saying one thing, but not insisting that his party's policies, as reflected in their platform, reflect his views, and we're not going to let him get away with it.
And
this is an important decision.
My only point is, and again, it's my job on both sides now to point out things that are inaccurate. Is in a fundraising
right.
email to misquote something to serve your argument just doesn't seem in the long term to serve
right.
your argument very well. But
I understand your point. But I think the balance of the email makes the case very clearly. And
in essence, nigga, I don't care. I understand that the overall is to be accurate and to be honest, but nigga, I don't care.
Because I got a job to do.
I got a job to do, and I'm going to fool these bitches into believing that Romney is an extremist. I don't give a crap about what you think, Anderson. And I know the truth matters to you because you're a journalist, but I'm a politician and I don't give a shit what you think. The point is that I'm going to lie because I'm a liar. And you know, get with the program, Anderson. You work for CNN. You're supposed to fucking really. I'm sorry. I cursed. You're supposed to hold our water. What's wrong with you, Anderson? Get with the goddamn program. We are liars, and that's what we do. Get with the goddamn program. We lie. Can you lie with us, please? It's the reason why your ratings suck. Because you won't lie with us. Can you lie with me? Please lie. Help me. Help me, please. And Anderson's saying to himself, he goes, look, Debbie, I don't really want to lie because I want to get ratings because my station, CNN, we're at a 20-year low and nobody's watching us. And I need people to watch us, so I have to challenge you so that people will think that we're legitimate. And could you please, seriously, just answer the question. Sorry. I'm sorry. You've been holding our water for a long time, Anderson. And you have to accept our lies. I thought you cared about this president. I thought you cared about the significance of his reelection. I thought you cared. I lie because that's what niggas want. That's what women want. That's what losers want. They want us to lie. So lie with us. Help me. Help me lie. Can't you lie with us? Mike's back on with us. Mike, go ahead. Go.
Oh, man. That woman is what you get when you let New York dudes move to Miami and vote. Jesus Christ. That woman is the reason Hitler put people in boxcars in 1940. Can you imagine the hell her husband has to go through with that ball-busting Jap? Good God. Just the sound of her voice is like nails on a chalkboard.
Is she married?
Well, she has a hyphenated last name.
Yeah, I guess Debbie Wasserman Schultz, right? I guess she is. But can you believe she doesn't care that she's caught lying? She doesn't give a crap about being caught lying.
No, not at all. It's unimportant. She got her soundbite out.
Well, she doesn't care because, I mean, you know, that's the platform that they're running on is lies. So why not keep it going?
Yeah, just stick with your lie, you know, and deny.
I understand the concept of, deny till you die. I know that concept. Back in the 90s, I was a cheater. And, you know, even when the girlfriend caught me cheating, still deny. You know, deny till you die. My ex-girlfriend, Laura, used to say it all the time. Deny till you die. Deny till you die. Don't give it up. Never, ever give it up. But this is what it is that I'm seeing. As a former liar, I know what this is about. You lie till you die. You never give it up. But she's caught out there misquoting him. But she says that doesn't matter. She openly says, I don't care.
It's a liberal thing, man. You know, I've been wanting to talk to you about this because I kind of had an epiphany this weekend after I saw 2016, and then I had the misfortune to go on Gawker. You know, Gawker is a bastion of homosexuals and liberals and feminists, and I queried why those people, liberals and feminists and gays, are overwhelmingly in favor of Islam. Or if you say something against Islam, they freak out and they say, oh, well, not all Islam is like that. And when you tell them, yes, you know, Muslims do stone gays to death and they stone women to death and they cut off women's clitorises, they will tell you a bold-faced lie. They'll say, no, they don't. They absolutely believe their lie. I think they're so committed to their lie and their position of being, God, I hate to say morally superior because their position is not morally superior, but in their mind, the most important thing to a liberal, I think, is to not be seen as oppressive or discriminatory in any way possible. And I think their stone grasp on this abortion issue is their way of saying, well, we're in no way going to oppress women whatsoever. even if the opposition is not trying to oppress women.
Right. Absolutely. Mike, I got an idea. I want to do something because now that I'm thinking about this, I want to do something. You have to ask. You have to answer me honestly whether or not you will do this. Okay? What I want to do from now on, okay, in the 9:30, the bottom of the hour, in the 9 o'clock hour, I want to do a segment called Black Crime. Now listen to me and tell me whether or not you are down to do this. Okay? Every weeknight, I want you to find crimes where, because you always tweet me on these stories. You've got a plethora of these stories. You find them when no one else does. I want to do a series of black crimes, blacks killing whites, raping whites, whatever the case is. I want you to do that.
That's not a problem.
And I want to do this whole thing, and I'm going to do a whole segment where we'll do the last half hour of the show where you will just give us 30 minutes at the end of the show every night, weeknights, and you will tell us black crime stories that we can talk about and respond to. Give us like 3 stories that we can talk about for 30 minutes. Can you do that?
I don't think the source material is going to be lacking or run out, okay?
That's my point. That's
yeah,
my whole
not
point.
A problem. 15 a week, we could probably do 150 a week.
I think that would be perfect. JC. JC, where are you? He's not even there. Where the hell is JC? JC, you there? No, he's not. He's probably dealing with I got the whole thing planned. We're going to do 30 minutes at 9:30 at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about crimes of black people against whites, and we're going to call it the black crime section.
I'm here. Hello.
Okay, here's the thing, JC. You're going to get the intro of cops. Bad boys, what you gonna do when they come for you? And that will be Mike's segment at 9:30 every weeknight where he will talk about crimes where we watch black people do the most insane shit.
I was telling JC off air that a good old friend of mine lives in Baton Rouge. And the storm is headed that way now, right? The storm has taken a turn to the west, and it appears to be heading right at Baton Rouge, New Orleans. The mayor of Baton Rouge gave a press conference today where he basically said, niggas don't loot.
What did he say?
He said, niggas don't what?
Loot. Yeah, he actually had to point out, we will not tolerate any kind of criminal behavior in Baton Rouge.
Are you serious?
The mayor of Key West didn't have to do that. The storm went right over Key West. There was no mayor of Key West saying, hey, you know, parrot heads don't loot.
Edward in Connecticut has joined us as usual. Welcome, Edward.
Hey, what's up, Reese? Hey, I just wanted to say one thing. Your nephew is the cutest little kid.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, also, I just heard your new thought for a segment. But what do you think about this? I don't know if you ever heard of this TV show called Car 54, Where Are You?
No, I never. Well, I know the regular series.
I was thinking maybe you should call that segment Al Sharpton, Where Are You?
Oh!
Oh, that's good.
I love that! Edward, that's brilliant! Oh, you know what? I swear to God, You just gave me a plan for tomorrow. I'm going to totally create an intro for Mike for Al Sharpton, Where Are You?
You know, you've got all these crimes that are very similar that blacks commit against whites, but you never see them. You never hear them say anything. So when these crimes come up, hey, Al Sharpton, where are you?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay, here's the deal. Okay?
Now, listen, I'm begging you guys, because you guys are much more internet savvy than I am. I try really hard. Someone's got to get me this audio of that song called I Want to Get Me an Al Sharpton Haircut. You got to find this song. I can't find it. No one's been able to find it. It was from the Z Morning Zoo in New York back in the 80s. The song is called I Want to Get Me an Al Sharpton Haircut, Slimy, Greasy Hair All Over My Face. You got to find it for me. You got to find it. If you can find it, I will create the best intro for this. I want Black Crime to be a prominent fixture on this show at 9:30. I'm going to promote it like crazy.
Well, you mean Black Crime against whites, just black on
yeah,
black.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no,
absolutely.
Nobody gives a shit about black on black.
Well, hey, look, if the Black Panther Party doesn't care about it, then neither should we. Hey, guys, what did you think of, what did you guys think of Friday's show, by the way?
Good God. I did a little research on what's it, the King Samir Shamaz Shabadabadu or whatever his name is. Oh, yeah. You know, he's a high school dropout who has charges for beating his girlfriend.
Yeah. You know what, Mike? I wish this whole weekend, when you sent me that email, when I got the information that you gave me, I was so angry at myself that I didn't look that up. I wish I'd known that when he was on the phone. When I was on with him on the air and he was literally there, I wish I'd have known that, because I'd have thrown that right in his face.
Do you like the photos of him posing with his $100 RG revolver?
Yeah, I totally love those pictures.
He's like Sneaky Samir in the woods. Like, the funniest one, man, there's some guy on YouTube who found one of King Samir Shabazz's teaching young Black Panthers how to fight videos. Oh, my God. I think he's retarded.
He's teaching people how to fight?
But he doesn't know how to fight. That's the thing. It's like, I don't think he's ever taken a martial arts class in his life.
I don't think he's ever defended himself physically ever.
He may have fought for a crack rock at one time. About it. Look, man, the guy's got dreadlocks and tattoos on his face, and he lives in Philly or something. He knows what crack tastes like.
He knows what crack tastes like. That's scaring the crap out of me. Now, hold on. Now, Mary appears to have a special report. Are you serious that story is true?
No, it's not. I looked it up.
Okay, so it's not true?
As far as I know, it's
not. All right, there's an internet rumor going around that Bill Cosby has died. It hasn't been confirmed as of yet. But somebody look that up and find out whether or not there's any truth, because that would be a huge story, if indeed it's true. You checking it out now?
Yeah.
I don't think he's dead.
No, there was a rumor back in earlier 2012 that he had died, but it wasn't true. So it may just be, it was something that somebody posted on Facebook.
All right, if there's any truth to that, we need to find out whether or not that's true, because that would be iconic. I mean, it would be a huge story if indeed it were true. We don't know of him having any health problems, but we're looking at it right now. What do you got on Wikipedia?
I don't know.
I don't really trust that site.
1962 to present.
Well, he's born in 62, so no, he's got.
No, that's long. Years active.
Oh, okay.
He was born July 12th,
1937. Wow. Oh. I didn't know that.
Damn, July 12th, 1937?
1937.
Wow, he's 11 days younger than my mother.
All right, well, if there's any truth to it, then we will definitely...
He's been married since 1964.
To Camille!
Yeah, I think they got married in Hartford.
Did they?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's from here.
Ah, well. All right, well, we'll take a break. We'll come back shortly. I got more news. I got definitely a big story I want to talk about when we get back. So stick around, guys. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Edward, for calling in. So stick around, guys. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Bill Whittle, and this is Afterburner. The Rolling Stones wrote, "You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need." And with Mitt Romney finally taking my advice and selecting Paul Ryan as his running mate, conservatives who make up the bulk of the Republican Party, only to be ignored and insulted at every opportunity, it seems, not only get what we want, but we also get what the country needs. First, let's go to what we want. Conservatives understand, especially Tea Party conservatives, understand that the existential threat to this nation is not Al-Qaeda or a nuclear Iran or illegal immigration or crumbling infrastructure or falling education scores or global warming or killer bee infestation. It's none of that. The only thing out there that has the power to destroy our way of life, to utterly render our lives unrecognizable, is the impending worldwide economic collapse that is coming and will happen, and sooner rather than later, if we do not get this insane, pathological, terminal spending under control. Now, to date, there's only been one politician on the national scene. Think of that. Of the 535 Americans that actually live in a democracy, the 435 House members and the 100 senators who actually get to have a say in what goes on out there, out of all of them, only one, has a serious plan to stop this train before it plummets off the rails and goes over the cliff. And that one person is Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party in 2012. And the Democrats are terrified of this guy. Terrified. Because simply listening to him speak for 20 or 30 seconds utterly flummoxes them. All Republicans, you see, have to wear one, if not two, or all three of three labels. Republicans are either evil, stupid, or old. So let's play along. John McCain, old. Sarah Palin, stupid and probably evil. George Bush, stupid and definitely evil. Dick Cheney, old and evil. Ronald Reagan, old and stupid. Newt Gingrich, old and evil. And, of course, Mitt Romney, who's clearly neither old nor stupid, therefore has to be painted as triply evil. But what do they do with Paul Ryan? He's not old, he's young. He's brilliant, he's not stupid, and he's likable and agreeable, so he's not evil. So they'll have to paint him as an extremist. But now the question becomes, who's the real extremist on the American spectrum? The two Boy Scouts? Or dog-eating Mr. You Didn't Build That. Ryan fires up conservatives the way Sarah Palin did for McCain, but Ryan will not be Palinized. Let's see Katie Couric ask Paul Ryan what magazines he reads. He'll probably say something like, Katie, you know, I spend 15 hours a day tearing apart 3,000-page health care bills, running statistical analyses of their pluses and minuses, comparing them with best and worst case estimates of revenues and shortfalls, and then I assign relative financial efficiency and effectiveness weighted variables to assess the best possible outcome. So I don't get a lot of time to read magazines, but when I do, I kind of like Field and Stream. Palinize that. I think Paul Ryan is the best way to win, but I know that Ryan is the best way to lose. I think we're going to win this election. I really do. And if we do, Paul Ryan on the ticket means some form of the Ryan plan, and that means a mandate to get the spending under control. But if we lose, we need to lose with the Ryan plan, because if we lose, it will mean that America, unlike Wisconsin, has not yet faced up to the full scale of the mismanagement, greed, waste, and corruption that have bankrupted the richest nation in the history of the world. I'm not sure that a Romney-Ryan administration will be able to defuse this debt bomb, but I am utterly convinced that under Obama too, that bomb will explode. We stand on the razor's edge, and the American people need to hear it, and they will hear it now. And if we are still a great people, we will do what the people of Wisconsin did. We'll follow belt-tightening plan, we'll take our medicine, and we'll start to get better. Or we'll do what Greece and France did a few months ago. We'll vote for pie. Everybody loves pie. Just keep the pie coming. When the pie stops coming and money has no value anymore, the American people will need to know that they had a choice, and they also need to know who was warning them and telling them to take their medicine, because then we will not have gotten away with a haircut and a bitter taste in our mouths. Then we'll be fighting for our lives, and that's when we will really need courageous, even-tempered, non-rock star adults like Paul Ryan, and the courageous, even-tempered, non-rock star adult like the man that chose him as his running mate.
Are you tired of government picking favorites in business? Is red tape making it impossible for you to earn a living? When private businesses collude with the government to exclude competition, you get cronyism. How do you get rid of it? You can try passing laws, but that only covers up the problem. There's a better solution.
Hi, Willie Bays here with another fantastic product. Crony Clean, the spray that breaks down cronyism by breaking down government bureaucracy. Normal products attack the side effects of cronyism by passing more laws and business regulations. But Crony Clean is different. It targets the root cause of cronyism, too much government. Using proven political science, Crony Clean eliminates the government influence on business, giving everyone the right to make a living. No more concentrated benefits, no more dispersed costs. America! Why waste your time and money fighting an uphill battle against special interest groups? With Crony Clean, you have the power to fight. Crony Clean can be applied to restore economic liberty, property rights, the First Amendment, and much more. Order now and receive Crony Clean for the unbelievable price of nothing. Just pay fewer taxes. But wait, there's more. Call in the next 20 minutes and you'll receive a free gift, the Dollar Deflator. It forms a strong barrier to protect your dollar savings from inflation. Keep America free by keeping the government out of businesses. Order now.
Offer not available in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. Side effects may include more economic freedom, jobs, less corruption, and improved quality of life. If you're a politician or lobbyist, please consult your doctor before using Crony Clean.
Thirty-seven minutes after the hour, right here on Ringside Radio on BlogTalkRadio.com. We are back. This is the 27th, 2012. The month is almost over, and we got plenty of work to do. Hey, listen, this is, you know, this whole Hurricane Isaac thing is funny to me. Let me tell you why. It's not that I want New Orleans to get hit again. I don't want New Orleans to have to deal with what they dealt with in 2005. But it's funny to me that these people are now realizing that they might need to evacuate. And when Mayor Ray Nagin didn't get those people out of there, he allowed those black people to be killed. He allowed those black people to be displaced. Piece of garbage he was. But that's just me. I'm just my personal view. Anyway, other than that, in other news, there's a story that's going around. I don't know whether or not you've heard it or whether or not you care. But Samuel L. Jackson has used this hurricane to make a point. He believes that this hurricane should have pounded Tampa. It should have pounded Tampa. That Tampa should have been hit. So those Republicans couldn't have their convention. And then somebody responded to his Twitter response and said, "Hey, Samuel, Let me let you in on a little known factor about Tampa. Other people live there, stupid. And you're not just asking for the wrath of the hurricane to hit Tampa for the Republicans, but regular people live there. And you're asking for that hurricane to hit Tampa and kill innocents. Now, let me just say something about Samuel L. Jackson. I like him, buddy. I like him. As an actor, I like him. I really do. I think you're fun. I think you're funny. I think you're, I think you're entertaining. But you're a dumbass. Like all of those liberal elites in Hollywood, you don't think before you speak. And this is what makes me lose respect for you. Hanging out with people like Spike Lee and Charlize Theron and Matt Damon and Michael Douglas, whomever it is that you do movies with, I don't care. Snakes on a Plane, Niggas in a Bar, I don't care. You're a moron. You didn't even recognize that the Republicans are there. You just hate Republicans so bad that you were wishing that the hurricane would hit Tampa so the Republicans could be killed. Yes, let's get all the delegates in the middle of that storm. Forgetting about the people who live there who are innocent. Until somebody had to wake your dumb ass up. You heard what I said. Wake your dumb ass up and say, Samuel, regular people live here is too stupid. They're not exactly having a convention on a deserted island. You know, like Haiti or Cuba or Puerto Rico. This is what it is that I cannot understand about folks like you, Samuel L. Jackson. You've proven to me that you're an idiot. That's what makes me angry. He's asking why the Republicans were spared.
Well, who the hell wishes harm on another person like that?
Liberals?
No, idiots.
No, my dear, liberals. In all this talk about Charlie Crist, who's going to be speaking at the Democratic National Convention, let me tell you a story that you don't know. Charlie Crist is a homosexual.
I don't even know who Charlie Crist is, so.
Just to let everybody know, Charlie Crist is a homosexual. Now, somebody sue me for what it is that I just said. Charlie Crist is a homosexual. Come sue me. Call your lawyers and sue me. Now, to prove my point, watch this. Let me prove my point. Let me go to somebody who I know knows. Let's go to Mike in Florida. Mike?
Hey, that's an open secret down here. You know, Charlie kept a condo in Clearwater for years. Everybody knew Charlie was gay. He didn't get married until he wanted to run for governor. And to be fair, nobody who's straight is that tan.
The reason why Charlie Crist was not selected as John McCain's running mate is because that there was rumors that he was a homosexual. Right or wrong?
Rumors my ass. We all know he's gay. It's no secret.
Thank you.
Did he hang out at that club that was in Clearwater, New York, New York?
I'm sure that he was down in Ybor going to Hamburger Mary's where all the homos go to eat gay cheeseburgers.
Hey, I've been there.
Yeah, that's the day after party and spot, and no, I haven't been there.
No, have you been to New York, New York?
To
Dude, no. If I go to Tampa, I go to Mons Venus.
You go to where?
Mons Venus.
Where is that at?
Mons Venus is on Dale Mabry in Tampa. It's the best strip club in the world.
Oh, is it?
Oh, is it across the street from like a, it's almost like a Buffalo Wild Wings, but like a...
No, it's across the street from 2001 Odyssey, which is one of the other best strip clubs in the country, and Scores.
Okay.
Really?
That area is strip club central right there down by the stadium.
Now, Mike, let's be honest, right? We know that in 2007, I apologize. 2007 and 2008, during the presidential election, Charlie Crist was a front runner over Sarah Palin until it was revealed by a bunch of operatives who said Charlie Crist was known to be, by plenty of people in Florida, that he was gay. Right or wrong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. And we all knew when we voted him governor. We just didn't care.
Right. And again, you shouldn't care. But the Republican establishment didn't want that on their backs when they were going into the election. And Charlie Crist, he was high on the list. He was number two.
Yeah, you can't have that hanging over your head, you know. The Midwesterners and the Bible thumpers are not going to be down with that.
But see, here's the interesting part. For somebody like John McCain, if he would have chosen Charlie Crist, imagine what the liberal media would have done in order to excoriate Charlie Crist in saying he's gay, that makes a problem, even though that they champion gay rights. You understand what I'm saying? You put
them. Are they
going
to have Anderson Cooper go after him? Come on.
Right, exactly. You put this guy, you put the establishment, as far as the media is concerned, you put them on their heels.
Yeah,
I
mean,
think John McCain would have won if Charlie Crist would have been exposed to be homosexual.
Look, man, I think John McCain would have won if he had run anybody but Caribou Barbie as his running mate.
Why do you say that, man? I got to be honest with you. I'm mad about people who didn't like Sarah Palin, man.
Because she, my theory on Sarah Palin is they picked her because she was good looking.
Really? You think that was
it? And that's it. Yeah, they didn't vet her at all. They didn't know that she, oh my God, thought that the Queen of England still ran England, for God's sake. She wasn't very bright, dude. She may have picked up something that she'd been in the public eye, but she wasn't very bright.
When do you think that Sarah Palin wasn't bright? Like, when do you think that was exposed? Do you think it was the Katie Couric interview?
Oh, it was the Katie Couric interview for sure. When she said, what newspapers and magazines do you read? And the response is, oh, well, you know, all of them.
I thought she was a blabbering idiot.
The difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull is lipstick. Thing didn't really do it for me either. I understand when people are trying to corn pone it up. You know, as a Southerner, you get these politicians who act like they're a good old boy. And I think she was trying to do that, but she wasn't very good at it.
Look, man, she's endorsed four people who have been candidates so far, and all four have been elected.
Maybe that's a good place for her, but she does not need to be anywhere near a nuclear launch button.
Well, we don't have one president who's capable of launching that. Remember what they said about Ronald Reagan, and I know you're a fan of Ron. Come on. Tell me you're a fan of Pop-Pop.
When he made the joke about the missiles are flying, yeah, that was great.
But come on. Dennis Miller, who was a liberal at the time when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States, he had one of the greatest lines ever. And the reason why I say it's one of the greatest lines, and I'm still a Reagan fan, I thought it was a great joke. He said, Ronald Reagan is about to turn 70. It was a week before Ronald Reagan turned 77 years old. And Dennis Miller said this joke in a stand-up comedy special. He says, Ronald Reagan is about to be 77 years old. He says, and he's got access to the button. He says, my grandfather's 77 years old, and we won't let him touch the remote control to the TV set. Funny as hell. But, come on. If there was anybody who was capable of making a judgment call when it came to war or foreign policy, tell me there's no one in history, with the exception of maybe, I don't want to say FDR, Eisenhower, whoever made the decision better than Ronald Reagan.
JFK did pretty well with that whole Cuban Missile Crisis. I gotta give JFK credit on that one.
Really? A standoff versus...
Hey, well, they got their missiles out of Cuba, and if somebody who lives, you know, 90 miles from Cuba...
It was a standoff that the Russians were fearful of. It doesn't mean that John F. Kennedy would have attacked.
He was a World War II veteran, man. And he stood up, he could have laid down.
You're absolutely right. He was a naval.
Yep. He got his ship sunk and injured his back, and you know he may have been a philandering drug addict, but JFK was a real man.
Okay, I'll give you that.
You got to give credit where credit is due.
All right, I'll give you that. You're absolutely right. He was a man's man. There's no lying about that. I will give. Even most conservatives will say that of everyone in the Democratic Party, John F. Kennedy was a man's man, and he was a centrist. I will agree with that. I'll agree with that. Because you know, for a liberal and a Democrat, for him to even utter the lines, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country," I got to give him props for that.
Yeah, and then he got shot, and that hack LBJ took over.
Well, that was a. I always equate John Kennedy's assassination with? It's Lincoln being killed and giving the Union, or for that matter, the Union, if you know what I mean, to Andrew Johnson. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like giving it over to an extreme liberal. You know, it's the reason why the two assassinations are compared in the way that they are.
Do you think that maybe that's the reason nobody has shot Obama yet? Because, God forbid, you give crazy Uncle Joe the reins?
No, listen to me. If there is somebody out there who wants to kill Obama, I will find them and kill them immediately. Because nobody wants Biden in that spot. Even for a month. It's 71 days till Election Day. I don't want that guy to have 7 days.
Did you hear there was some big Democrat fundraiser in the Hamptons with all the Hollywood hoity-toities, and Biden shows up 3 hours late?
Like a piece of garbage.
And like half of them bailed. I think like Eva Longoria had to leave because she wouldn't wait for him or something.
Even Russell Simmons bailed.
Oh yeah, Eva Longoria, by the way, is the representative for Latinos at the DNC. Yeah, she's the average Latino who's worth $39 million.
Yeah, exactly. And look, don't get me wrong. She's cute. She's small. She probably weighs about 12 cents. But she's a moron. Which proves
there's some show that comes on where they test celebrities' DNA to tell them their ethnic profile. And you look at Eva Longoria, and it's obvious she has a lot of Spaniard in her. It's obvious. I mean, she does not look like George Lopez. When they gave her results and they said, you know, you're like 80% or 85% white, like 10% Indian, and a little bit of black. She was like, I can't believe I have that much white in me, but at least I'm 5% black.
Are you serious? What show was that?
It's something called Where Do I Come From? It's some
Where
do you think you are?
NBC show?
Yeah, who do you think you are?
Don't you see your good hair? Yeah, and your small butt? You're obviously white.
Is she on that show?
Oh, yeah, she was on one of them. I think there's a couple of them, but she was on one of them, and she was actually upset that she had white people in her.
Wow.
Although, seeing who she dates, that might be the only time white people have been inside her.
Oh! Oh, come on. She wouldn't be a star if white people weren't in her.
Oh, I guess she's had some Jew in her. Oh!
We have to start calling her Eva Longoria. That's just me.
Yeah, she's the average Latina with a Bentley and a mansion. Yeah,
now,
she's down with the.
Can I watch that on Hulu? Because I have a Hulu. I want to watch that on Hulu.
Probably. Let's see if I can get you a link here.
Oh,
but yeah. You know,
like, I want to watch
that. They have
that.
The show on Hulu, but I don't think that they have her particular show on there.
Oh, because I totally want to watch that. Eva Longoria is part white, and she's and now that's not the show with Skip. Would Skip from Harvard University, right?
Don't know. Well, it's something called Faces of America on PBS.
Oh, you no, that's Skip's show. If it's on PBS, that's Skip's show. The racist professor, when Obama said, you know, the police officer acted stupidly.
Okay. Yeah, if you just Google Eva Longoria DNA, it's the first result. Yeah, with Henry Louis Gates Jr.
Yeah, that's Skip Gates.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's the show. I knew it was his show. Because, yeah, he likes to show Negroes where they come from. He likes showing that they come from Africa. You know, he's excited to find out that they got nigger in them. He's really excited about it.
What do you think they found when they checked out Christy Yamaguchi? Hey, you're Japanese. No kidding. You are 100% Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're not going to show your show. We're not going to air your episode on PBS because your lineage goes all the way back to Japan. We didn't find any African in you.
All right.
That's disgusting.
So, hey, my mom has been doing some genealogy, right? You know, checking out the family and all. She put the extended family on it. Here I thought I was just from, you know, poor white trash. No, it turns out that my ancestors in Alabama own slaves.
Your ancestors own slaves? How far back?
Yeah.
200, 300 years?
Back in the 1800s, like before Civil War.
Now, hold on. Mike, listen, we only got a little bit of time. We got 3 minutes. Okay, help me out here, Mike. Okay? You have to understand, I'm your friend. I love you. You're my bro. Okay? Did your family have a plantation with a lot of niggas on it? Come on, help me out here.
I think they were like mid-level. I don't think we had a big plantation. We might have had a few field hands.
What part of Alabama?
Coastal Alabama.
Okay, so
like Biloxi-ish.
Okay, so near Biloxi. Okay, so you had Negroes on your plantation. What did your family farm? Like, was it cotton or any of that?
It's kind of hard to figure it out, but I'm assuming it was cotton back then. And we were also officers in the Confederate Army.
Wow, you come from like history, like. You know, nigger hating Confederates.
But there was also one traitor who didn't fight for the Confederates and went up north to fight for the Union.
What's that?
We had one traitor relative, one of the brothers, actually left and went and fought for the Union. Left Alabama.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
He was probably not very popular at family reunions.
Probably not. He probably didn't even show up because back in the day.
He didn't get to come back.
Did you have any Did you have any family that fought in the war?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were Confederate officers.
Really?
I also have relatives who fought in the Revolutionary War. Believe that one.
Oh, so your lineage runs deep, dog. You run real deep.
Way back. We fought against the British.
Runs deep.
No, but, I mean, come on. That's a significant part of our history. I mean, I got
the
capacity can run it that far back.
I think now that makes it kind of problematic for Mike to do this new segment because it's, you know, actually his fault, because if his family picked their own cotton, you wouldn't have these all these black crimes.
Now, my grandmother was actually the daughter of a sharecropper who picked cotton. So
really?
I actually come from cotton pickers also.
Okay, so your family picked cotton along with the Negroes you owned.
Different side of the family, like my poor grandmother's like hillbilly family, actually, you know, took over for the slaves and picked the cotton on the sharecropper.
Oh, man, you got to send me this genealogy. I love it.
I will get it from my mom and send it to you.
Oh, you got to. See, I know my family comes from prominent slave trade. I know like white man and African. I know that we gave them up. You know, frankincense and myrrh. I love you. Thank you so much, as always, man. All right, let's end the show. It's Monday. We will see you guys tomorrow. Mike, you have to send me that lineage. Promise me.
Not a problem.
Jesse, I'm gonna spend tomorrow. I'm going to hook up this whole thing. It's black-on-white crime. That's what we're going to call it, black-on-white crime. I got a whole segment we're going to do. I'm going to hook it up for Mike. Mike's going to put up all of these. We're going to do 30 minutes of black-on-white crime, and we're going to expose it. And we're going to have some fun. I promise you. This is a great segment. I promise you. We are going to have a blast. Thank you guys for joining us. As always, it's Reese on the Radio. We will see you tomorrow. And enjoy the rest of the week. It's Reese on the Radio. Holla back, y'all.